Thank you very much, and welcome to everybody who's joining the webcast and this call. First of all, a big thank you for taking the time to participate. Before we start, I just wanted to go through our safe harbor statement. The information presented today contains forward-looking statements that involve known and unknown risks, uncertainties, and other factors. These may cause actual results to be materially different from any future results, performance, or achievements expressed or implied by such statements. For a description of some of these factors, please refer to the company's Form 20-F, its most recent quarterly results on Form 6-K that respectively were filed with and furnished to the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. Now I want to hand across to Vas Narasimhan, the CEO for Novartis. Thank you.
Thank you, Samir, and thanks everyone for joining today's conference call. With me today, if we move to slide three, is Harry Kirsch, our CFO, Richard Saynor, the Chief Executive Officer of Sandoz, and you've already heard from Samir. So moving to slide four, today, as you heard earlier or saw earlier today, Novartis has concluded that a separation of Sandoz by a 100% spinoff is what we believe is in the best interest of shareholders. And we expect completion of the proposed spinoff in the second half of 2023. What we'd like to do is walk you through at a high level some of the overview considerations that we made in taking this decision, the profile of the two companies, and some of the details of the specifics on the transaction. Now moving to slide five, we've concluded that the separation of these two businesses would create two standalone companies which can fully focus on their respective strategies, business segments, and ultimately maximize their impact as well as maximize value for shareholders. For Novartis, the new Novartis, we have a clear investment thesis as a focused innovative medicines business. Our capital and investments will focus on bringing new technology platforms in our core TAs, new medicines to life in those core TAs. It'll enable us to really focus on the execution of the pipeline and commercialization of our assets, as well as an improved financial profile and return on capital. We also believe this will enable us to simplify our organization and operations and fully focus our capital on our critical business needs. For Sandoz, this creates a clear investment thesis as a generics and biosimilars business. Sandoz would become the number one European generics company and a global leader in biosimilars. We believe this will enable Sandoz to follow strategies to win in the long term in the generics market, allow it to have more freedom to operate, freedom to allocate its capital as best needed to achieve its business goals, and to build an organization that is fit for purpose culturally and with the right talent for the generics industry. All of our assessments over the recent period have concluded that there are limited synergies between the innovative medicines and generics businesses as they're at opposite ends of the biopharma value chain. But importantly, we do conclude that biosimilars and generics have strong synergies. Hence, we bring these two businesses together in Sandoz. Now, moving to slide six, we've concluded as well that 100% spinoff is the preferred separation path. And there are a few reasons for this. First, from a value standpoint, we believe that Novartis shareholders can benefit from the future upside of both businesses and make their own portfolio decisions as to which businesses they would like to own for the long term. It provides also business clarity and focus for the two independent operations, enabling each business to take on and complete its own business transformation. And we also know from our own precedents with Alcon, the largest public market spin in recent memory in Europe, which was a highly successful spin, we can do this in an attractive way. Other benefits include a high certainty of completion of a transaction, an expectation to be generally tax neutral for Novartis, and lastly, an immediate full separation and deconsolidation of Sandoz at the time of spinoff. Some of these considerations will be covered in more detail by Harry on subsequent slides. Now moving to slide seven, we want to also highlight that for the new Novartis, the Sandoz separation would improve the financial profile of our innovative medicines business and enable us to fully execute our innovative medicine strategy with those improved financials. You see here on this slide that we would expect our sales growth from 2021 to 2027 to be in the 4% range. We expect our core operating income margin over time in the 2027-plus time horizon to reach 40% or more as in terms of core operating income. And then lastly, free cash flow and return on invested capital would also improve as a standalone innovative medicines business. So we're pleased with this opportunity to really improve the profile of a new Novartis 100% focused on innovative medicines. Now turning to Sandoz, Sandoz has become a unique pure play market leader across generics and biosimilars. And we believe highly well positioned to take advantage of what is a really highly attractive off-patent market opportunity. Moving to slide 9, Sandoz is a global leader. Here you see IMS MAP data from March 2021 to March 2022. The combined generics and biosimilars business on a gross sales basis of $12.7 billion makes Sandoz the largest player in this segment in the world, clearly having scale and capabilities across the key segments and the key markets in the sector. Moving to slide 10, importantly, we believe Sandoz is uniquely positioned amongst its relevant peer sets with its mix of generics and biosimilars. When you look at the chart on the left, we've charted global sales from biosimilars against global standard GX sales. And you can see that Sandoz is as a uniquely positioned company, benefiting from 65% of its sales from standard generics and 35% of its sales from biosimilars. There are many benefits to having this kind of diversification. One is a balanced risk profile. Two, an organization-wide expertise and generics mindset that can be brought to both segments. They can leverage their deep scale and understanding of their key customers. Biosimilars leadership, of course, offers margin upside and the opportunity given the growth of the biosimilar segment to grow significantly. And we believe substantial synergies exist between generics and biosimilars, given how the biosimilars market has evolved in terms of commercial execution, channels, people, and culture. Now moving to slide 11, that positioning will endow Sandoz over the coming decade to take advantage of what is really an attractive off-patent market opportunity, growing today from $251 billion of generics and $25 billion of biosimilars to a total market of $470 billion, driven by very strong growth in the biosimilar segment and solid growth in the standard generic segment. We believe healthcare policies will continue to encourage generics and biosimilar adoption. There remains high-value biologics, which will be going off patent in the coming decade. And there continues to be an important and positive shift in physician attitudes in the U.S. towards biosimilars, building on the already strong adoption of biosimilars in Europe. So moving to slide 12, taken together, you know, Sandoz is well-established player in the industry with the capabilities to win in the long term. From a portfolio standpoint, the business has both biosimilars as well as the key segments within small molecule generics, including oral solids, a leading position in anti-infectives, a growing position in injectables and sterols, and also a growing future position in respiratory generics. Its fit-for-purpose commercial engine and competitiveness in terms of cost and flexible supply will allow it to compete well over the coming years. It has a people and culture that's proven over the many years that Sandoz has been built, bringing together strong generics companies in different regions. From a growth standpoint, Sandoz will have 15-plus assets in biosimilars that can drive a strong wave of growth over this next decade, as well as good coverage of the 350 small of the LOE coverage of, in small molecules with 350 molecules in development. From a competitiveness standpoint, Sandoz has a critically strong footprint in Europe, Japan, and other emerging markets, and a strong and growing, regrowing business in the U.S., good gross margins, and good control of its operational costs. Now, moving to slide 13, the first half of this year, we believe, has demonstrated the strong profile of this business. You see in the first half, we had sales growth of 6%, driven by Europe, where Sandoz, as I've mentioned, is the leader, good growth as well in the rest of the world, and a stabilizing U.S. business. Sandoz in this space is ultimately a European rest of world business with a strong future position in the U.S., which we think creates an attractive investment opportunity. You also see in the right the full-year guidance for the business, which was increased. and a solid pipeline, which should enable us to continue to drive growth into the future. Now, moving to slide 14, I'll hand it off to Harry to provide some of the transaction details.
Yeah, thank you very much, Lars. Hello, everybody. Good morning. Good afternoon. Very pleased to be here and share with you some of the transaction details of this proposed transaction. Now, before I go into the details, just want to step back. So a lot of work to be done here. Right. I mean, it follows in general the Alcon playbook now that the board has agreed to this transaction. But there's a lot of work to do because, of course, Sandoz has been more integrated into Novartis than Alcon was. But all the plans are in place, but now we have to get to work to get this done. So we do envision that a spin-off completion would happen in the second half of next year. And then that basically the Sandoz team would do IR roadshows and capital markets day, mainly in half one. And after the full year results, which we would present end of January, and where we would provide, for example, guidance for Novartis, including and excluding Sandoz, as well as for Sandoz, the future financial targets. Of course, the first opportunity to engage with the Sandoz team will be also at our Meet Novartis Management Day in September. So if we now go to the next page, page 15, some more of the details here. So it will be a 100% spin-off of the new Sandoz share to our existing Novartis shareholders. The sixth will be the Swiss exchange will be the listing menu. And we will have, we'll set up a U.S. ADR program. And generally, we expect this, like the Alcon spin, to be tax neutral for Novartis and most of our shareholders. And incorporated and headquartered, Sandoz would be in Switzerland. In terms of the financial profile and the balance sheet or the debt situation, there we would target an investment-grade credit rating. And also to be able to deliver on the plans for growth, some investments, as well as attractive dividends. In terms of dividend policy, because we keep getting questions on that, and try to be super clear here, that all of the dividends that would come would be incremental to the Novartis dividend, and we will not rebase our Novartis dividend even after a separation of Sandoz. So we will continue to grow our dividend based on the dividend we just paid out in March of this year. I hope that clarifies that question, which comes up so often. As mentioned, half two would be the spin completion. In terms of further actions, this will be announced in due time. For example, some of the distribution ratio, you know, what will be the conversion from Novartis, what will be the ratio from Novartis to Sandoz shares, the board, the chairman, chairwoman selection, and so on. All of that would come. And, of course, this, as you see in the transaction conditions, several conditions as always, but one of them will also be the final Novartis board approval as well as the shareholder approval. And we would envision then and likely an extraordinary general assembly 6 to 8 weeks roughly before then the final spin date. If we move to the next slide, just a bit, as this may also have some questions, but we see clearly the Swiss exchange as the natural listing location, given the Sandoz headquarters in Switzerland and, of course, the legacy of the Sandoz brand. Also, we basically mirror the current structure of the Novartis listing and the Novartis shareholders all being able to remain invested and participate in the expected future growth of both Novartis and Sandoz. And just at the bottom here, we detail, we keep also an ADR program, which offers the flexibility to our U.S. investors and, of course, also for the U.S.-based employees to participate via share participation programs. With that, back to Lars.
Thank you, Harry. So turning to slide 17, I think it's also important to note this is an important moment for Novartis as a company as it completes our journey from a conglomerate with numerous business segments to a fully focused innovative medicines company. Since 2014, we've been on that journey. You can see the various steps we've taken over the years. But with the proposed spinoff of Sandoz, we will be a 100% innovative medicines company. Moving to slide 18, we think that new Novartis provides a very attractive value proposition to investors. From a scale and growth standpoint, we'll have a strong position in our five core therapeutic areas and continuing to build positions on top of small molecules and biologics in critical and important technology platforms for the long-term growth of our sector. We have six key in-market brands, multiple launches in flight, and then a multiple pipeline readouts that will be coming over the coming years with up to 20 potential billion-dollar plus assets with approval by 2027. And this also enables us to focus even more on our goal of delivering high-value assets out of R&D so that we can consistently generate that above-peer median growth that we've committed to. Our commercial engine is number one in Europe, and in the U.S., we aim over time to achieve a top-five position, enabling us to have a balanced global footprint that enables us to fully commercialize and maximize assets around the globe. We're also focused on driving synergies and leveraging our global scale. You've seen our recent organizational announcement, which will continue to enable us to create a more agile and fast organization, as well as improve our margins and enable us to invest in R&D. We expect this to lead to a stronger financial profile for Novartis with improved core margin, free cash flow, and return on invested capital. And we'll continue, as Harry outlined, our shareholder-friendly capital allocation policy. And lastly, we have an experienced managed team, which is completely focused on future growth supported by the new organizational model that we are implementing. Moving to slide 19, in summary, Sandoz offers a unique value proposition to investors as well as a pure play market leader across the generics and biosimilars market. A global leader in generics and biosimilars in an attractive market segment that will grow to $470 billion over the coming decade. A strong pipeline in small molecules and biosimilars. A strong commercialization engine that's proven itself with a number one position in Europe and a deep understanding of customers. A good financial outlook that will provide more details as Harry outlined in the first part of next year, and a commitment to provide Sandoz with a solid capital structure, which will allow it to allocate its capital both to invest in its business and pursue business development opportunities, and a commitment from a Sandoz team to develop lean and efficient operations. And lastly, a strong and experienced management team on the Sandoz side that's experienced in the global generics and biosimilars market and knows what it takes to deliver growth in that segment. Moving to slide 20 and in closing, we, of course, will be holding our Meet Novartis Management on September 21st and 22nd. It'll provide an excellent opportunity for investors to meet the leadership teams across the various parts of Novartis and Sandoz. And we'll look forward at that time to also taking further questions on these various businesses. So with that, I'll open the line for questions.
Thank you. As a reminder, to ask a question, you will need to press star 1 and 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Once again, star 1 and 1 if you would like to ask a question. We will take our first question. Please stand by. And your first question comes from the line of Matthew Weston from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you very much and good afternoon. Two questions, please. They're both financial. Harry, in the past, you've talked about diseconomies of scale if you took the decision to spin out Sandoz. And I think I'm right in saying you also said they would likely to be more substantial than those we saw with Consumer and Alcon, because Sandoz was more embedded in the Novartis business. How much of the group corporate cost today do you think you'll be able to reduce with a Sandoz spin, or should we think of it as that cost staying with the innovative medicine business? And then a quick housekeeping one on tax. Can you just give us an idea of how the tax rate for Novartis splits today? Is it very similar for Sandoz versus IM, or there is a meaningful difference? And if so, what is it? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Matthew. So to start with the tax, I would expect, of course, we have to finalize all of that, right? As we finalize the carve-out financials, we finalize the perimeter and so on, I would expect it to be relatively similar. And in terms of, you know, corporate cost, so first of all, the corporate cost, there is nothing really dedicated to Sandoz as we see at the moment, right? There's the activities above the different businesses. On the other hand, we will find after some additional work the corporate colleagues have to do over the next 2-3 years as we set up a new standalone company, I'm sure we will find, and over the midterm, also some further efficiencies. And if you know, as Vart laid out, we have given now a midterm guidance of a mid to long term of 40% plus for the new Novartis. That, of course, includes corporate, and it's basically an upgrade from the prior 40% plus for the innovative medicines. Right, so how exactly this will play out, we have to figure out. But we will find further opportunities to streamline our operations, and we expect that by being a focused innovative medicines company.
Thank you, Matthew.
Perfect.
Next question, operator.
Helpful. I'll jump back in the queue.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll take our next question. Please stand by. Your next question comes from the line of Simon Baker from Redburn. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you for taking my questions. I also have two. Just a quick question, firstly, on the financials. You alluded to the seeking of an investment-grade credit rating. Some idea of how we should be thinking about the debt that Sandoz will be begin life with. And secondly, in the Florida multi-district litigation over Zantac, Sandoz is a defendant, Novartis isn't. Would it be reasonable to assume that should there be any liabilities, that's how it will sit, that any liabilities sit with Sandoz, they will not sit with Novartis? Thanks so much.
So on the first question on the credit rating, Harry?
Yeah, thanks, Simon. Yeah, as I mentioned, we target a investment grade credit rating, which, as you look at this this sector, would be in the BBB-minus area. With that, we would expect a low to mid-single digit billion debt push down. But we would do it very thoughtful in a way that Sandoz would have reasonable level of debt, but still freedom to operate.
Thanks, Harry. And then from a legal standpoint on the H2 antagonists, first, it's important to note that Sandoz was a very small player, well less than 1% of this market segment over the recent years. So we view any exposure as de minimis at this time. It would be premature, I think, to comment on how exactly we will deal with that specific case. But in general, as a principle, we would expect any legal liabilities that are largely related to a business to go with that business at the time of separation.
Thank you very much.
Next question, operator.
Thank you. We'll now take the next question. And your next question comes from the line of Richard Vosser from JP Morgan. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for taking my questions. Two, please. Just one back on costs, please. I think Sandoz has done quite a lot of manufacturing for innovative medicines potentially. So just, are there any manufacturing dyssynergies that we should think about? So incremental costs in COGS that innovative medicines might have to pay to now what would be a separate company. And actually just on Matthew's question again, we're effectively saying, I think from your answer, Harry, that there would be incremental costs on top of the corporate costs for Sandoz that now have to be allocated. I know it's early, but any idea of that amount? Did I understand that right? And then second question, just on the growth profile that you highlighted in terms of the off-patent market. Just thinking about the Sandoz portfolio, within both elements of that off-patent market, the generics and the biosimilars, how do you see your portfolio? Can you outgrow the expansion of those markets? Is that how we should think about it? Thanks very much.
Yes. Thanks, Richard. First on manufacturing, just to clarify, today as an integrated business, we have an integrated manufacturing network. We have identified a certain number of manufacturing plants which would move to Sandoz, which are predominantly or almost wholly producing medicines for Sandoz. There's a set of plants that are predominantly or wholly producing medicines for Novartis. That includes the biologics manufacturing, which will 100% be retained by Novartis. We'd of course have TSAs across the two businesses, but we would not expect there to be an increase in costs for Novartis IM, particularly because we will retain all of our biologics footprint and retain the production facilities that produce the vast majority of our medicines. Now, in terms of the corporate cost question, Harry, if you want to take it again.
Yeah, Richard. So let's go through different elements of cost and synergies and also streamlining opportunities over time. So, of course, Sandoz will have some stand-up cost as a public company, right? Some corporate functions, or the corporate function have to be set up there. Again, all of this is being finalized. I would expect that to be in the range of around 70 million per year, but that over time, the ability to drive lean further leaning out of structures, that by far gets offset by activities, within streamlining that business. Then on the Novartis side, again, in the first couple of years, we have additional efforts here, so I don't expect corporate cost reductions. But then in the midterm, especially long-term, further streamlining opportunities there as well in order to contribute to the 40% plus mid to long-term margin for the new Novartis company structure. There will be some one-time stand-up costs. Nobody has asked about this yet, but I just want to mention that. For Alcon, that was $1 billion. It was a bit of a smaller business. Here, we envision this one-time separation cost to be $1.4 billion plus minus. But again, we expect then, via the streamlining of two focused companies, to by far, offset that one-time separation cost over time.
Thanks, Harry. And maybe just to put a fine point on it, at the time of our announcement of our transformation program, we highlighted that we would expect our innovative medicines business to have a midterm margin guidance of 40% plus. Now we're saying, as a standalone Novartis, inclusive of our corporate costs, we will be at 40% plus, which means in the midterm now, we would mid to long term, we would expect to be able to offset the corporate cost element and get the whole company to be at 40% plus ex Sandoz. Does that clarify, Richard?
That is perfect. That's very, very clear.
Next question, operator.
We had one more on
growth segments. Richard.
Yeah, so I think, Richard, you wanted to understand where we saw the growth coming from and could we consistently beat the market. I mean, if you think there's only, $500 billion of product coming off patent in the next 10 years, roughly 60-40 split between small molecules and large. If you look at our position in Europe, we generally aim to have 80%+ coverage of all LOEs in small molecules. We've consistently executed around that and delivered growth from Europe. In the biologic space, we've more than doubled the number of assets in partnership and development, so we now have 15-plus assets. And those start beginning to launch really from the end of 23 onwards. And that drives significant incremental growth and expansion in terms of the margin mix. So we're confident that the expanding portfolio, the strengthening portfolio, both in Europe and in other territories then will deliver good, solid growth.
Thank you, Richard. Next question, operator.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Tim Anderson from Wolfe Research. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, thank you for taking the question. Richard Wagner, Wolfe Research, on behalf of Tim Anderson. I have two questions, please. The first, what other generic companies does Sandoz or Novartis believe are good comps for investors to think about from a valuation perspective? Second question, please. Years ago, I believe Novartis described there as being synergies between having an innovative and generics division, and you had mentioned already an integrated manufacturing network. Today, we see that there are limited to no synergies. My question first, am I mistaken in thinking that there had been synergies put forward in the past? And if not, what has happened over the years? Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Richard. So I think it's in terms of the comps, I think you all know well there's a wide range of multiples one sees in the generic and / specialty pharma segment, largely dependent on the mix of products they have and the geographic focus they have. I don't think we're going to be providing specific companies that would be comps, but I can provide, again, the profile. Here you have a business that's number one in European generics, one of the leaders in most emerging markets that it plays in, a global leader in biosimilars, with a limited presence in the U.S. that could be built off of over time. And so we really think about it as a European-focused generics company with a strong global base and a global biosimilars business. You're not going to find a precise company, as we tried to outline on the 2x2 chart that we showed in the slide deck, that exactly equates to that, but I think you can find the range of companies that with that mix to say, you know, what would be a reasonable multiple for a business like this. And I think it's important to look at that geographic presence and the business segment in order to make that determination as best as possible. In terms of synergies, in 2016, we did have a program in which we integrated Sandoz further into Novartis, and that was based on a thesis, particularly in biosimilars, where we thought that biosimilars could benefit from Novartis' manufacturing capabilities as well as global commercialization scale. In the meantime, the biosimilars market is increasingly, in most markets we compete, behaving like the standard generics market, where you need outstanding cost competitiveness in production, you need the ability to compete with portfolios and tenders, you need to be able to rapidly meet the needs of customers, and the importantness in production, you need the ability to compete with portfolios and tenders, you need to be able to rapidly meet the needs of customers, and the importance of classical medical affairs and large-scale promotional activities is a lot less than market access activities. Given that those synergies no longer exist within the segment, which was the primary value driver, we've come to the conclusion that actually a biosimilars and generics business on its own would be best fit to be a standalone business and does not have synergies with our core innovative medicines business. That is a change, but I think it is also a change in the market environment that we've observed as biosimilars launched over the last 6 or 7 years, and that led to the shift. I would say Sandoz does benefit from the tremendous capabilities of Novartis Biologics in order to drive down cost of goods and have a competitive cost base. We will have service agreements to provide supply to Sandoz, but Sandoz will also have the flexibility now to build its own standalone biologics manufacturing, technical development, and development organization in order to compete in the long run in the biosimilar segment. Very good. Thank you, Richard. Next question, operator.
Thank you. Please stand by. Your next question comes from the line of Graham Parry from Bank of America. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Great. Thanks for taking my questions. So just firstly, actually going back to legal liabilities, just on the Valsartan and NDMA lawsuits as well, just clarify again, Sandoz would indemnify Novartis against future liabilities from personal injury lawsuits there. And can you just confirm again, NDMA was only an issue for Sandoz, not Diovan brand product, and I think only Sandoz cited in lawsuits. Just clarify that and confirm that. Secondly, on the manufacturing, just following what you were saying then, Vaz, about building its own manufacturing network, would the intent also be for Sandoz to use a significant increase in third-party manufacturing, and how long do you think that shift would be away from Novartis manufacturing? Because presumably that's a lower incremental return on asset-based return for Novartis to manufacture generics. And then third and last question, just on leverage, you touched on the leverage that Sandoz would have, but also allowing it to pursue its own strategy. Do you see the generics and or biosimilars business as fragmented and Sandoz as a potential consolidator in that market? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Graham. So first on legal liabilities, I confirm that Novartis is not a party to the nitrosamines with respect to Valsartan. And again, our principle is that liabilities that are predominantly or completely associated with a given business, those liabilities will go with the business at the time of spin. So yes, those liabilities would move with respect to Sandoz. With respect to manufacturing, the current expectation is a five-year agreement to provide supply to Sandoz and biosimilars with the option to extend to 2 years. That's our current assumption. And, of course, Sandoz, I think, would want to try to see if they could move it out of the Novartis network if they have their own capacity and ability to drive lower cost of goods in the meantime. Nonetheless, we want to ensure business continuity and business stability for Sandoz to enable that Sandoz business to be as successful as possible. So providing that five-year assurance, we think, is reasonable. And in terms of Sandoz being a consolidator in the generic space, maybe, Richard, you want to comment on BD&L opportunities? And
I think we're always, in our plan assumptions, we will continue to look for M&A and BD targets. But given that we have such broad coverage of LOE, I can't see much consolidation. They'll be around very much specific either assets or market segments or strengthening particular markets. So I don't see strong consolidation in this sector.
Yeah, so more of a targeted approach to BD and M&A for Sandoz. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next question, operator, if there are more questions.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Mark Purcell from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yeah, thank you for taking my questions. I have two. The first one's on pricing environment, and the second one on policy changes. In terms of the pricing environment, the biosimilars market is becoming increasingly competitive. There's often half a dozen biosimilar companies now chasing the same target. But at the same time, the inflationary environment is becoming less helpful when it comes to generic operating margins, especially for players without the global scale you've just described Sandoz already has. So could you help us understand the anticipated pricing environment going forward and where Sandoz fits against this backdrop? And then secondly, the Inflation Reduction Act might change the balance between extended patent litigation battles, of which you've been involved in several, at the expense of being subject to direct negotiations and deeper discounts in the long term within Medicare. Otherwise, the flip side is you could have another model where you see the advent of limited biosimilar competition within the context of a more favorable pricing dynamic environment. So what's your view there in terms of the legislative changes that we're currently seeing and whether that's supportive for a business like Sandoz competing in biosimilars?
Yeah, thanks, Mark. So first on the pricing environment, Richard?
Yeah, it's a good question, but I think it's a little bit general. If you think, the two launches that we're looking towards next year, you've got adalimumab in the U.S., probably the single biggest LOE event in the history of this industry, and we probably see a 10, 11 competitors. And I think there you'll see a very strong price erosion. But equally, then, you start seeing slightly smaller size opportunities for drugs like natalizumab, where we see potentially, again, we look to file in the U.S. again, and there we probably don't see any competition in for the next 4 or 5 years. So, again, it's very, very different by a different product. And I think certainly on the biologics, clearly the cost and time element and the number of biologics now is increasing. So I think there's always going to be an attractive space in terms of that mix. On the small molecules, it's something that's been consistent in this industry. You know, normally 4 or 5 points of price erosion is pretty standard, and it tends to flow through. But clearly, again, looking at moving up the value chain into more specialty injectables, complex injectables, respiratory assets, again, lower levels of competitive intensity and more sustainable over longer periods of time will help manage some of that as well.
Thanks, Richard. In terms of the Inflation Reduction Act, I think it's a great question, Mark, and I can't say that we have the perfect answer yet. We're certainly looking at scenarios of how things might play out given the proposal on when biologics are negotiated, how they might be negotiated, and what that might mean for the attractiveness of biosimilars, also some of the other smaller legislative changes that happened with respect to trying to promote biosimilars. So I don't think we have a definitive answer to your question. It's likely, as Richard said, in some biosimilar cases, we will have to now reassess if I'm sure Richard and team actually will reassess if the biosimilar is still attractive market opportunity, but there will still be a handful of options and opportunities to launch highly attractive biosimilars. And just to build on Richard's answer, I think there are multiple places where Sandoz is uniquely positioned. Just two examples are natalizumab and denosumab, are places where, you know, Sandoz has a unique position. It's picked a molecule where there is the ability to be one of the few players in the market and then hopefully drive long-term success.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. Next question, operator.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Seamus Fernandez from Guggenheim Securities. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Great. Thanks, guys. So just two quick questions. First, just on sort of capital allocation and share repurchase discussions that, you know, sort of kicked off and share repurchases that were along the way this year. How should we be thinking about capital allocation going forward? Obviously, you guys have confirmed the strength of the dividend, but just wanted to get a better sense of how we should be thinking about the share repurchase plans that were announced towards the end of last year and initiated in more strongly this year. And then the second question relates to just sort of the interchangeability question, which I think is a question that's kind of increased or intensified to some degree with the Coherus ranibizumab approval, so the generic of Lucentis or biosimilar Lucentis. How do you guys, you know, sort of decide, because the FDA continues to talk about a treating each biosimilar as a one-off, but how do you decide on the types of trials that are necessary to run going forward as we think about those types of possibilities? Do you see interchangeability as kind of the most realistic path forward to pursue over time? Thanks.
Thanks, Seamus. First on share, our share buybacks, Harry?
Yeah, Seamus, thank you very much for the question. You know, it's probably a very short answer with this, nothing changes. So the announcement today doesn't have any impact on our capital allocation of Novartis. So we continue with our, you know, 15 billion share buyback as we have started it. We expect that in the second half of next year this is concluded, right? And then we see what further capital allocation decisions have to be made. The dividend, as you mentioned, is expected to grow, and of the Swiss franc per share base that we had this year over the next years, of course, and that's our dividend policy of a growing and strong dividend in Swiss francs per share. And in terms of M&A, bolt-on will continue to be our focus to strengthen our therapeutic areas, which we have clarified to be five. Right? And so from that standpoint, no change of the capital allocation policies.
Very good. And Richard, on interchangeability?
I guess the jury's still out. I mean, clearly, it's not something we've deliberately pursued at this point. I think we'll see how I think the market evolves with the ADA launch, where some parties have gone for interchangeability, the majority haven't. And then we'll consider how then we choose to file going forward.
Very good. Thanks, Richard. Next question, operator.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Peter Welford from Jefferies. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for taking my questions. I've got just, I think, three left. Firstly, just with regards to the actual split of the businesses, and apologies if this has been said, but are there any parts of Novartis at all that will go with Sandoz at the spin, or are the companies very much as that we see at the moment in terms of the revenue split? Thinking particularly as well, I think there's a contract manufacturing business, for example, within Novartis, but also, and I know this has been addressed in the past, I thought I'd bring it up again. Can you just confirm none of the respiratory business as is at all will go with the spin to Sandoz? Secondly, then, just with regards to the sale process, or at least the stories that there were in the media, are you able now to confirm, were there any approaches that were made for you to buy Sandoz? Were they only ever preliminary? And perhaps, you know, how those discussions panned out, or whether the decision was made that was not the most prudent and tax-effective way to pursue this split. And then just finally, you mentioned the biosimilars and what's going on there with regards to manufacturing. Are there also any clauses with regards to Sandoz's freedom to potentially develop biosimilars to Novartis's own medicines in the future? Or will there be total freedom to operate as far as Sandoz's strategy in the future? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Peter. So first, with respect to the segments, Novartis, in terms of Novartis and Sandoz, we shifted the contract manufacturing business into the IM P&L. So now the two businesses are reported as you would actually expect them to be as standalone entities. I don't know, Harry, if there's anything more you'd want to add. Or...
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly not any, you know, significant move. Biosimilars, the current generics portfolio, as reported for Sandoz, is there. The contract manufacturing is and stays with Novartis.
Respiratory stays with IM as
well. Respiratory stays. So it's pretty much in the overall scheme of things, pretty much the current segment reporting on the sales.
And then, Peter, in terms of the sales process, I can confirm we only had received preliminary inbound interest, but never any formal offers, from private equity. It is our fiduciary responsibility that if we were to receive any further inbound interest, of course, fully evaluate them and ensure that it's in the best interest of our shareholders to continue down the spin path. But that is absolutely our current intention and expectation that the spin is the best way to go for our shareholders and the two businesses. And then lastly, in terms of biosimilars, Sandoz on spin would have freedom to operate, to pursue any business opportunity that it would like, including to developing biosimilars for Novartis products.
Very
next
clear.
Question,
thank you.
Operator?
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Stephen Scala from Cowen. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Many thanks. The first question is a follow-up of an earlier question, but did the recent healthcare reform bill give management any pause in pursuing this transaction at this time? One could argue diversification could be an asset, so taking a bit more time to think it through might have been a good idea. So that's the first question. Second question is, I appreciate that you are seeking to focus on Novartis's innovative medicine strategy, and I understand that Sandoz has some company-specific issues which make it unique. But when Novartis got into generics 20-plus years ago, Novartis Pharma's goal was also to pursue innovative medicines, and my recollection is that it was pretty good at it. So why did owning a generics business make sense 20 years ago, but not now? Has the pharma market changed, and if so, how? Or do you believe the strategy was just wrong 20 years ago? Thank you.
Thanks, Steve, and nice to hear from you as always. In terms of healthcare reform, no, it did not give us pause. I think we have ample time and opportunity to take appropriate strategies in the U.S. Medicare market, where I would note that Novartis is one of the lowest exposed companies in the sector, and we've reconfirmed that through our own reanalyses based on the latest legislation. And in terms of our pipeline, we can adapt the pipeline, I think, to optimize value creation, even in the context of potential price negotiations. And then also when I, as I answered to the earlier question from Seamus, that we, or from Mark Purcell, that it's difficult to judge at the moment, but also for biosimilars, we think there's ample opportunity to within the biologic segment as well for biosimilars. It would just have to, of course, be adjusted for the various elements of the recent past legislation. So it didn't give us pause, and we moved ahead based on business strategy, value creation for shareholders. Now, in terms of the history, I think there's been two large trends that have happened that I think have enabled us, you know, led to this decision. I can't speak to the decision, you know, decisions 25 years ago, but there was an expectance, I believe, at that point in time for these businesses to converge more and more, for there to be opportunities for being in the generic segment to give you portfolio options to improve the performance of innovative medicines and for innovative medicines to increase the options for a generics business. And holding both of those would allow you to provide a unique value proposition to governments and customers. Now, the reality is over the last 20 years, the businesses have further diverged, and that innovative medicines is very unique, commercialization, R&D, et cetera, and generics as an even more specialized and different commercial model, such that there is no identifiable synergies that we can find in any of our key elements of our value chain between these two businesses. So I think it's a question of, you know, there was a hypothesis and it didn't fully plan out as the company expected. So then it's the logical thing to do to now separate and go in two separate directions. I think on the innovative medicine side, the other element of the story is that, of course, the competitiveness and the breadth of technologies and science that's out there means that being a winner in innovative medicines takes tremendous focus on outstanding R&D productivity and world-class commercialization, as well as being on the leading edge of various technology platforms that are emerging, and then having the ability to flex across those different technology platforms as more data arises. Keeping the minds of our management team and the energy of our organization focused on that, outstanding R&D productivity and outstanding innovative medicines commercialization, we believe is a better long-term value creation opportunity and use of our capital than splitting our capital across these two businesses.
Thank you.
Next question. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you. And your next question comes from the line of Matthew Weston from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you. One quick follow-up and a question for Richard. Harry, you mentioned the $1.4 billion single upfront cost for the split. Can you confirm if that's all cash? And then the second question for Richard, given your very strong footprint, particularly ex-US, there have been a number of moves more recently from companies that I would say are kind of crossovers between specialty pharma and generics to take on tail products from major pharma and try and limit their decline and maximize the cash flow from those products. Is that something you can ever see Sandoz doing in the future that would fit with your existing footprint, or that's outside what you see of as your core business?
Very good. First, Matthew, first, Harry on the $1.4 billion.
Yeah, the one-time separation cost, mostly cash, distributed probably over 3 years, some of it or most of it before the separation and some of it after. So, yes, that's also how it played out for Alicon.
Thanks, Harry. And Richard?
I guess it's a good question. I don't see it as a key strategic driver. I mean, there are certain parts of the portfolio. So in Europe, actually, we're the second largest OTC generics company, highly attractive segment. Those kind of areas are much more interesting. You know, they have growth potential. We can promote and expand them. The trouble with mature brands, unless they're in very specific therapy areas, so clearly we bought the GSK cephalosporin business, but that's a business that fundamentally has growth potential and is very specialized. Those assets just generally decline quite rapidly, and it's taken an awful lot of investment to get any kind of growth back. So they're not so attractive, so I'd much rather focus in different areas.
Terrific. Thanks, Richard. Thanks, Matthew, for the follow-ups. Next question, I think last question, operator.
Thank you. We will now take our last question. Please stand by. And your last question comes from the line of Jo Walton from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
I'm sorry, I was a backup because Matthew had to leave for a short period of time there. But whilst I have the opportunity, can I ask two quick questions? Harry, I believe you told us originally that this would take some time to sort out, and if you were going to get serious offers from trade buyers or others interested, they'd need to see the full financials. You wouldn't have that until the middle of the year. So I'm surprised you say you've only had one preliminary approach, because I was under the impression that it was only around now that you would be able to get those approaches. So can I just check and see, is there now a firm view that perhaps the tax situation would be such that you'd have to be offered so much money for the premium, tax just wouldn't make it worthwhile? Or could we still see a big offer come in? And my second question is, we always ask this, but with Sandoz being a big part, only part of a much bigger company, you've been able not to tell us. But could you give us some idea of your first to file status? It's all very well telling us that you have a full pipeline and there are gazillions of drugs going generic. But if you are not in the first wave, as you are not with Humira in the U.S., for example, how do we know how much profitability there will be? And you, other companies give you some sort of proportion or an idea of value where you think you might have 6 months plus of exclusivity. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Jo. And I guess Credit Suisse is full on this call.
Yeah.
We appreciate it.
Three times.
And
Oh, holidays for us.
In terms of the offer, there is always the possibility that a party wants to come in. We have now the ability to provide all of the relevant data. And of course, if a very attractive offer came in that would provide us a different value proposition than a spin, we'll of course fully evaluate it. But based on our diligence and our assessment of the various options, we think the spin is far and away the most likely and best way to separate these two companies. But we certainly, from a fiduciary responsibility, we cannot rule out the fact that a party might come forward, do the appropriate diligence, and provide a very large offer. And then, of course, we would evaluate it as such, as we would in any case, in any situation of a separation of a business. In terms of the first to file story, Richard?
Yeah, I know there's two parts to that. I think clearly as we look towards the roadshows next year, we would think about how we give more clarity about the nature and characterization of our pipeline and where we see whether exclusive opportunities or first to file. I would, I mean, I think that said, I mean, I think the U.S., the days of sort of the U.S. generic business from 5, 10 years ago with 180 days exclusivity, a lot of that has just gone. I mean, most now, you first to file amongst several. Most originators do have authorized generics. So it's a much more dynamic place. So you have that. And what I would say, I mean, certainly from a European point of view, where we do have really good coverage, even when we are sometimes not necessarily first to market, we normally end up being the market leader given the strength and the intimacy that we have in those marketplaces. But I think, again, look forward to having the opportunity to give more details as we go into next year.
And certainly, I think at the capital markets roadshows that we'll conduct in the first half of this year, we take the point, Jo, that we need to provide more context and detail, and we would certainly plan to do that at that point in time. Thank you all very much for taking the time on short notice. Really appreciate it. Appreciate the questions. Look forward to continuing the dialogue at Meet the Management. And we wish you all a good rest of the week. Thank you.